Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, hey, what's going on, folks? We are here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show. Here on the MRI Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio, this is your host, James Bell, the boxing analyst of the Cold Truth on Sports. Just getting in here a little bit late because looks like there are some issues. Getting on here through Blog Talk, but we are, you know, here live now. Number to dial in the Talk Boxing Live is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on queue and be able to talk live on the show. We got a lot of boxing to talk about tonight, as we had multiple fight cards over the day yesterday, and we got a big card coming up on Saturday, May 7th, so we will be getting into that here on this show. First, we're going to get through this commercial here right quick, and then we'll get into the boxing talk. So we'll get started here in a few moments.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch other callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout level.
What is it?
I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcast Network.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
All right, we are back here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show. The dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, that is 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on the queue. Be able to talk live on the show. The live portion here is for 1 hour we will be on live until about 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, and then we'll have about 30 minutes or so for overtime here on the Emerald Broadcasting Channel. So, once again, that's about an hour of live talking, and we get into overtime here with some topics within the boxing front. All right, we'll pretty much get into it here on the show. We'll start with the card that was on Showtime last night when we had the super middleweight title fights on the line with the first fight between Chucky DeGale and Rogelio Porky Medina for DeGale's version of the super middleweight title fight. And that first fight over there at the DC Armory was a very good back and forth fight between DeGale and Rogelio Medina. I mean, it seemed like when DeGale was a heavy favorite against Medina, but Medina was a very game fighter there for DeGale and produced a few very good rounds between those two, specifically the fifth, the sixth, and the eighth rounds. And I see that, you know, DeGale pretty much promised a KO of Rogelio Medina in that sixth round, as one of the other guys that was in that other boxing match at the DC Armory, Badu Jack, was able to take out Rogelio Medina in the sixth round. But Medina was very game. He was going back and forth with James DeGale. He was able to connect a lot with James DeGale. Was very active from round 1 to round 12, throwing a lot of punches. Worked the body a lot of James DeGale, and was able to, you know, score a good amount of punches. It didn't look like a lot of them were very significant to affect James DeGale, as DeGale was able to still get the decision victory over Rogelio Medina. And it seemed like he got he was very successful with the right uppercut that he was throwing at him. So it looked like DeGale, like I said, he was trying to pull off that six-round KO over Rogelio Medina, but I was unable to get that and got the decision victory over Medina to retain his version of the super middleweight championship that he received. And it looked like he was going to be well on his way to the unification fight that was coming up there against the winner of the Badu Jack Lucha Bute fight, which was later on in the day. DeGale was able to get the unanimous decision victory with the 117, 111, 116, 112, and 115, 113 scores. So the unanimous decision victory, it scored a better percentage of punches over Rogelio Medina. Just getting in here real quick, we got area code 205. What's going on with you?
What's going on, James? This is Mike Grady, man. How you doing?
Doing good there, Brother Mike. Doing good. Yeah, just getting started here. Going over the fights that were at the DC Armory last night with that first fight that happened between James DeGale and Rogelio Medina, which was a very good fight, back and forth fight that I wasn't able to catch live there because, yeah, I was somewhere else. But once I was able to watch the fight, I saw that it was a good back and forth fight that happened over there. So what did you think about it?
So I saw so many fights yesterday. I'm trying to remember what happened on the fight. Can you give me your synopsis so I can kind of recollect what happened? Because I'm drawing a blank on the fight.
Yeah, this was the first co-main event there on Showtime over at the D.C. Armory with James Chunky DeGale against Rogelio Porky Medina for DeGale's version of the Super Middleweight Championship fighting. And it was a back-and-forth fight. Rogelio Medina was very game against James DeGale. He threw a total of 1,140 punches in that fight. Was working the body a lot, especially within the first half of the fight. Was, you know, fairly successful with the body punching, but nothing that was very significant against James DeGale. And James DeGale, in turn, was very successful with his right uppercut, which he was throwing multiple times from an unorthodox position. And he had a better connect percentage, but James DeGale, like, threw about, I'd say, almost about half the amount of shots that Rogelio Medina had, but still scored the unanimous decision victory with and retaining his version of the Super Middleweight Championship. And it showed like a few good rounds in there, like round five, round six, and round eight had very good back and forth action in that fight.
Okay, yeah, I remember. I remember now. Definitely, I enjoyed the fight. You know, I was watching the fight. I didn't get like too low with the fight. I agree to some extent when the announcers were saying that DeGale makes some of the fights a little bit more tougher with doing the extra stuff. I kind of agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the guy was a pressure fighter, and, you know, yeah, he was cutting the ring off pretty well and, you know, applying pressure pretty well. But I think at the times when DeGale wasn't jabbing and stuff, you know, that's when the guy was just kind of walking in. And, yeah, he got caught with the uppercut quite a few times, but DeGale probably could have made it just a tad bit more easier if he just touched him a little bit more. Like, some rounds he did jab, but other rounds he just kind of, I ain't gonna say he went to sleep, but he was, I don't know what he was doing. He looked good as far as, like, turning and, you know, doing stuff like that, but he wasn't putting
right.
it in his face to keep the dude off of him. And so I know he
right.
got the little awkward style or whatever, but, yeah, I don't think he would beat Badu Jack.
Yeah, with that type of style that he was doing there, yeah, he was trying to make the fight more exciting, but at the same time, he was leaving himself open a lot. So, yeah, he was letting Rogelio Medina get score some punches on him that he really, if he, like, had some type of defense, he wouldn't really have to, you know, have Medina even score on him. Just real quick, we got another caller in, area code 202. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on? It's Will Rank.
What's going on, Will Rank?
Not much. I just came in at the end of the conversation. What y'all was discussing?
We were talking about that first co-feature between James DeGale and Rogelio Medina.
I heard part of what you guys are saying, and I agree with y'all for the most part. I want to know, who did y'all think won the fight?
To me, I mean, it was kind of one of those things where the challenger had to do something significant to beat the champion. And I don't think that Medina did enough to beat the champion. I'd say it was, you know, I would say it's a 7-5. I wouldn't give it the scores like an 8-4 and a 9-3. I would give it a 7-5. You know, one of the judges gave it a 9-3, and another judge gave it a 8-4 in favor of James DeGale. But I didn't see where you could clearly score 8 rounds for you know, James DeGale, and especially not 9 rounds for James DeGale.
Yeah, I agree with James where he says, you know, when you take his belt, you kind of got to do a lot more. I know that that sucks and that's, like, terrible reasoning, but, you know, it's like, yeah, he won a few rounds, especially with the body punching where DeGale was looking pretty, but he wasn't really throwing no punches. And, you know, toward the middle, his punch output kind of just, I ain't gonna say it stopped, but it slowed down from earlier when he was, like, really touching him. And then the guy just kept, you know, coming on, and he just kept doing what he was doing, cutting off the ring and stuff. But I would say DeGale won the fight, you know. But, yeah, it was closer than – I didn't really score the fight, but I just felt like DeGale won.
Yeah, so I felt like I didn't start scoring the fight, and I didn't start scoring the fight at all, actually. I didn't score the fight at all. But what I will say is the last three rounds of the fight, I thought Medina won those three rounds. So I'm figuring at some point for the first 8 or 9 rounds, Medina had won some of those rounds. So again, I didn't score the fight. I know to my opinion he won the last three rounds, and for it to be those wide of scores, I didn't think it was fair. I thought the body work that he did, he was consistent in it for most of the fight. DeGale did some good uppercuts. He did some. He landed some good right hands, too, but they wasn't, like you guys said, he didn't throw the jab, and when he wasn't active, he wasn't active. So,
right.
You know, I thought Medina should have got a better outcome. I don't know what that would have been. I really didn't, you know, I didn't care enough about, you know, where they actually, to me, I thought it would have been nice if he would have got a draw or would have got the decision just based on how DeGale treated him and some of the things DeGale said after the fight and all that. I was real disappointed in DeGale because, and we talked about this previously, and how we compared Triple G and some of his, what he should do and this and that. I thought DeGale was the best super middleweight in the world prior to yesterday. I thought he was the best in the division. I thought, you know, not that he would dominate Triple G. I thought he would be the best person for the job. But after I saw what I saw yesterday, I don't know anymore. Because DeGale, you know, he made a lot of excuses after the fight saying, and I think he did take Medina lightly. I think he, if you look at Medina's record and some of the people he lost to, you'll think, you know, you'll get the impression that this guy is just a dude. But he can't, I think yesterday was probably his best performance in his career, even with the knockout of Jay Leon Love, because that was like an early knockout or whatever. But he put 12 hard rounds against an elite fighter. And I thought, you know, I was very disappointed in DeGale and his performance, not being active with the jab, being dismissive of his opponent. Any world-class guy that gets the opportunity, usually for a world championship, they're going to try to put their best effort forward. And James DeGale, you know, you can kind of tell he's changing up his style more to be a more of a fan-friendly fighter. But still, for you to be, you know, the top of the division and put that type of effort out in terms of just discrediting his opponent, I don't think that speaks high to, you know, to – he did that with Groves, too, just dismissing people, and that cost him in his fight. So he needs to take every fight seriously going forward.
Yeah,
I'm coming that I don't think he would beat Battle Jack.
Now, I disagree with that, though. I think he's better than Battle Jack, though.
Yeah, I don't know that.
Right now, at this point, his skill level, I would say, is above Battle Jack. And, yeah, the thing here with Regalio Medina, he did, you know, defeat. I mean, he did lose to Badu Jack by a 6-round TKO back in 2013. And, you know, also, he did score that KO win over J. Leon Love in 2014. So, you know, Medina is a, you know, game fighter. And while he did, like, lose about four, like, he went through a string of, like, losing 4 of 6 fights, he had, like, a 4-fight win streak before. Going after James DeGale there. But with what World Rank said in reference to DeGale as far as, like, him being kind of, like, dismissive of his opponent, he was really, like, acting like that after the fight, saying that he was, you know, fairly disappointed about the performance, and saying that he should be taking out people like Medina, and that he said that, you know, he was like leaving himself open a lot against Medina in this particular fight.
Yeah, I think he discredited, you know, like I said before, the Groves fight was the same thing. He's coming in, he's just thinking that, you know, my talent, and, you know, he was saying that in the interview too, you know, skills pay the bills and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, for whatever reason, he just doesn't think, you know, other things other than skills play a factor into fights. And obviously yesterday, you know, Medina isn't on his skill level, clearly, but this guy fought even with you. So that goes to tell you that, you know, skills aren't everything. You have to bring other things to the table, and you have to bring your A game every time, no matter who the opponent is, because they're going to bring their A game if they're fighting for a title.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. And so with that, I mean, he had the Gale movement to 23 wins in that single loss that he had. Coming in with that, he's coming in there with the win coming into, Washington, D.C., and I think that's, his second fight that's in the States? Yeah, it looks like that was his second fight in the States, with that other one being the one where he won the IBF Super Middleweight Championship against Andre Darrell in Boston. So he's moving on to his next fight, which is going to be, you know, potential unification. Well, I mean, it's actually going to be a unification match, as that's what the card was all about. That's what the title was. And it, to face the winner of the next fight that we're going into, which is that fight between Battle Jack and Lucian Bute. And that one ended up being a majority draw, as Battle Jack was able to retain his WBC Super Middleweight Championship fight with two cards saying 114-114, and Judge Steve Rattles giving the favor to Battle Jack with a 117-111 scorecard. And it looked like a lot of people were very disappointed with the judges with that majority draw there. And it looked like it seemed like Badu Jack had the upper hand in that fight, and it looked like, they just tried to give Lucian Bute a couple more rounds than he was supposed to have. I think that was I would say that was probably a kind of like an 8-4 type of round. And I think that, you know, with Bute, it seemed like that was a similar instance where he was facing, Chunky the Gale, and couldn't necessarily get the amount of rounds that he really needed in order to take the WBC Super Middleweight Championship from Bobby Jack. So I'm going to start here with World Rank. What you think of this fight?
So I'm not necessarily the technical person when it comes to boxing. I actually enjoy the sport for other things outside of what actually goes into actual boxing. So I'm learning the technical aspect of it. So I don't speak a lot towards that. I actually put money down on Bute, only for the fact that I couldn't see something. It's something missing about Badu Jack, and you know, he was the best, had the best resume in 2015. I thought he should have been Fighter of the Year with his win over Darrell and his win over Groves, and that, and those fights came from nowhere. So I thought he should have been Fighter of the Year for his opposition and for him fighting fighters that he was not favored to beat. And, you know, in my book, I give guys real credit for that, for fighting guys and beating guys that they're not supposed to. So finally he gets a he gets a fight where he's fairly favored in his fight against Lucien Boutte. I don't know what it is. Boutte looks kind of shot to me. Like, it's like his reflexes isn't all there, but that also speaks to how talented, you know, he was at his peak, because to still be able to compete on this level, and even with the previous fight with DeGale, even though he lost both of those fights, he's still in those fights. So, you know, even though he's lost something, he's still in those fights. And I think that that speaks to what type of level he was when he was at his peak. In terms of Badou Jack, in terms of going forward, I still think he's a KO waiting to happen going forward. I don't know if DeGale's the person to do it. I still think DeGale's better than him. I think the difference is DeGale, to me, has a better chin, and he has shown it previously over his fight. But I like Badou Jack. He's a good little fighter. You know, being with Mayweather has helped him get the opportunity. So, you know, he's a good fighter.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with most of that. Yeah, just going into – yeah, go ahead and see what your thoughts are on it, Mike.
So, yeah, I definitely think he was robbed in the fight. I actually – like you said, his 2015 fights made me a fan of Badou Jack. And, you know, at first, yeah, I thought he was pretty extra regular. And then, like you said, going into fights where – he was not supposed to win. He won them, and, you know, like, he pretty much neutralized Darrell. Like, he made Darrell pretty much gun-shy, and, you know, he didn't give Darrell very many chances, and, you know, I think he did sort of the same thing now, at least earlier in the fight. Like, he was very technically sound, and, you know, he doesn't give people a lot of chances to hit him. You know, yeah, when he does get hit, his chin probably is suspect, but, you know, for 87% of the time, 70-80% of the time, he's, you know, has a nice high guard, and, you know, he does things that technically keeps him in position to, like, you know, to win, so to say. And, you know, he just, like, I don't know, he looked good to me, like, at least half of the fight. And then toward the end, I don't know if his, like, his mental just lapsed or he just was fatigued or whatever, but toward the end, he, you know, wasn't as tight and as crisp with his defense and his offense. And, you know, I guess that's kind of what encouraged the judges to think that, you know, the fight was closer. But I think he should have won. You know, he weaned at the end, and that looks like it cost him with the judges. But I actually like him. I favor him over DeGale, because if DeGale doesn't jab, and this guy, the main thing he does is keep his hands up, and, you know, I would imagine that he is smart enough to watch out from the outside and watch for DeGale, you know, doing the crouching tiger and trying to hit him with an overhand punch from the outside. You know, I think that's something that he has learned. And, you know, with his high guard, he will guard that all day. You know, yeah, DeGale has even more, you know, angles that he'll throw at you. But I definitely think Badou Jack, you know, with his technical abilities and, you know, moving, sliding and stuff, he'll be able to not get hit with anything too big and pretty much keep it tight and just box him and win. But, yeah, I think it was a bad call as far as the judges, but he did slow down at the end. He wasn't as crisp as he was in the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, I saw that, you know, close to the end of that fight, too. And I think that, you know, with that being said, I think, you know, that should have at least had, you know, Badou Jack had the upper hand in most of those sorts of scorecards. I didn't necessarily see where you could see how Lucien Boutte would have the draw in that fight. And, you know, with, you know, Boutte's punch output being down and his overall connect percentage going down in this particular one, he should have, you know, had the loss in this case. I mean, he landed overall, he landed at a lower percentage. It was almost like double the percentage as Badou Jack scored 40% of his shots, while Lucien Boutte scored at about 21% with, 179 connected out of 857 punches thrown. So I couldn't really, you know, see how you know, Lucha Bute could have had, you know, 6 rounds out of this particular fight. Even with that being said, with it being a majority draw, and Battle Jack retaining the belt, it seems like it will be the unification fight will be between Battle Jack and James McGill. Seems that is probably coming around September as the Showtime representative says that it was going to be a it was going to move forward with the Gale and Jack. That's coming from general manager Stephen Espinosa of Showtime Sports.
I got a random comment. I think he's probably the best fighter in Nate Stable. Like, out of everybody I can think of, everybody else has glaring deficiencies or they're extra regular. Like, he's above extra regular. Like, he's actually good. He beat some good guys, and I don't see very many people in the stable who aren't extra regular. What do you guys think?
I think he's the best right now, but I think Gervonta Davis got a chance to be better going forward, if that makes sense.
Gervonta Davis might get knocked out before that happens. His lack of – well, I guess Badu Jack got knocked out, so never mind. I don't know. They need to tighten up his defense, man. He just – he don't jab either.
Yeah, he doesn't either. Yeah, I saw that. I saw that in Gervonta's fight on April 1st. Yeah, he doesn't use the jab a lot, and he leaves himself open to punches because of it. And it's like World Rank said about the fight between Chunky DeGale and Rogelio Medina. When you don't use the jab and you just stand there, you let somebody that works a lot throws a lot of punches like Medina scores against you, scores to the body and scores with their jab. So I see that also with Gervonta Davis. And if you have somebody that has good length and, you know, can take a good punch and uses his range very well, that spells trouble for Gervonta Davis.
I think anytime you have somebody that has elite at anything, either it be elite power, elite defense, elite speed, they can be very good fighters. And I think Davis has elite speed. I think he has world-class speed right now. Like, he has probably top 10 fastest hands in boxing right now. I know that doesn't speak to his defense. I think he has the opportunity to be go much more further in the sport than Badu Jack.
Like, I understand where you're coming from, but I think that his speed is going to be his curse, like Amir Khan. I think he'll be like, not an image of Amir Khan, but, you know, like something in the same line as Amir Khan. Have all the speed and talent in the world. And, you know, Amir Khan competitively could probably contend with most people, a lot of people. But, you know, stay there and throw one or two punches too long, you end up on your back, and now you got to, like, show everybody your wheel, this iron wheel, you know? But I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, exactly. Just bringing in one more person here, area code 813, what's going on with you?
Hey, what's up, JBZ? Mike, what's going on, guys? Terrell calling from Tampa, just checking in.
What's up, Terrell?
Yeah, Terrell. Hey, we were just going over that fight between your boy, Lucian Bute, and the WBC Super Middleweight Champion, Badu Jack, that happened at the D.C. Armory. So what did you think about what happened there with Lucian Bute?
Yeah, I'm kind of lost in the sauce on that one because my weekends are always power-packed with work and promotions and stuff like that, so I didn't even get to see none of the fights once again. I did read about the Bute Badu Jack fight, and just from what the gist of it, I heard that. I know it was a draw. I know that was a draw. I only saw one of the cards. I think one of the judges 117, 111. I'm not even sure, but from what I've read, they said that justifiably Badu Jack should have won the fight. I mean, so for it to be a draw, I mean, it's a possible. So I thought there would be definitely be a flat out winner in that bout, but I guess judges thought otherwise. But going forward, it sets up a unification fight between Jack and DeGale. So that's going to draw a lot of interest as well, along with the fact that once I didn't see the DeGale fight, but heard the guy he fought, I forgot, Rogelio, I think his name, gave a very, very, very rough fight. So that's boxing. It's boxing, so we'll see.
Yeah, I would say that the DeGale Medina fight was a better fight back and forth. They had like a few very good rounds between those two that could have been scored either way in reference to that. So I think that fight was a lot closer than the Badu Jack Michon Boutte fight. But with those results that happened there with the majority draw with Jack Boutte and then DeGale Medina, with DeGale having the unanimous decision win, that leads to DeGale versus Jack later on in this year for unifying those two super middleweight championship belts. And it's looking like that may be over in England in September as we had Chucky DeGale from England and Badu Jack Wally Fox out of Las Vegas under the TNT banner. He is from Sweden. So I think that would be an international fight that would probably gain some interest overseas there. All right. So
one small point to that, too. One thing that we don't talk about is Badu Jack's age. We don't talk about that much at all. I mean, I'm not saying he showed his age, but keep in mind this guy's, 40 years old, 40, 41? Remarkable.
Who?
He's 41?
Badu Jack, he's, 40, 41, right?
He's 32.
You sure? I'm correcting. I may be wrong. I'm sorry. I thought he's older.
He's 32 years old, yeah.
Mm-mm. Okay, my bad then.
He's been in the fight game since 2009, so he's had, about 7 years in the game. But, 32 years old, and just had that, singular loss against Derek Edwards, and that was pretty much it.
Okay.
Yep. All right, so we'll get into the next little thing here, which is the PBC on Fox card that happened in the main event that was there with Victor Ortiz going up against Andre Berto over at the StubHub Center in Carson, California. And, it was expected to be a action-packed fight back and forth with Berto and Ortiz. And Berto was able to score the fourth round TKO victory, after being knocked down in round two. But it looked like there with the two knockdowns that happened with Victor Ortiz, the first knockdown was, kind of valid, and the second one, he was able to get up from the second knockdown, and, referee Kermit Bayless referee Jack Reese was able to ask if Ortiz wanted to continue, and he didn't really necessarily answer the referee. So the referee just pretty much called the fight there within 1 minute and 14 seconds of round four. So Andre Berto moves on to get the victory against Victor Ortiz. He moves to 31 wins and 4 losses. And keeps his high ranking in the WBC contenderships there active as. He was currently at number two there below, I think it was Amir Khan at the current juncture. So it looks like with, Amir Khan moving up to that middleweight fight against Canelo Alvarez, it seems like Andre Berto is the top contender for the WBC welterweight championship that Danny Garcia currently has, who was in attendance for that particular fight. So let's start with, you know, Mike, what do you think about that back and forth fight there between Victor Ortiz and Andre Berto, and what you think is in the future for Berto after this fight?
Yeah, so I honestly didn't think it was all that back and forth. So I felt like Victor Ortiz looked better in the fight. I felt like Victor Ortiz controlled the fight, so to say, with his plan to box. The only thing that I felt like Victor Ortiz did wrong was that he was overly committed to boxing. Like, if I had to compare another boxer who boxes and, you know, and gives ground, but in the midst of that, they turn it into offense. They turn it into an arsenal. Let's say Keith Thurman. Even Floyd Mayweather does it. Like, Floyd will give ground. Keith Thurman will give ground against the Matador-type fighter and tap you. But as soon as he see an opening, he'll, you know, bust you in the face. You know, old Floyd probably don't bust you as hard because he got the brittle hands. But, you know, Keith Thurman will bust you in the face, and he'll turn his defense and moving and you know, avoiding punches, he'll turn that into you know, offensive arsenal. And so that's the only thing that I think failed Victor Ortiz, is that he just was so committed to just boxing, even though it was working, until, you know, Berto threw a perfect punch that, like Victor Ortiz said, he didn't see, and he caught him with that perfect punch uppercut. And so, you know, we all know Ortiz doesn't have the mental side of the game. I don't think that means Ortiz can't beat some of these you know, B-level fighters, because I definitely think he shouldn't be compared to fighters like Povotnikov and stuff like that, where their will is their major asset. Like, okay, Victor Ortiz is a good fighter, and I felt like he was controlling the fight, but he just does not do well when he has adversity in front of him. As long as he's in front of the eight ball, Victor Ortiz will do well in the fight, and he'll throw punches. Well, he didn't come in there trying to knock nobody's head off yesterday, but, you know, old Victor Ortiz will throw punches, but it's only when he's, you know, facing adversity, when he, like, crumbles and stuff. But outside of him not being in front of the eight ball, I think he will be competitive with at least some of the people coming up. What else can I say on the fight? Yeah, Berto, I don't know. I'm going to blame it on his stiffness, but I made a comment maybe like a week or two ago, and I think I said it to World Rank, but about Broner and Berto. Broner beat the shit out of Berto. You know, like, when I think about it, Broner is stiff, but he ain't that stiff. Broner's faster than Berto. Berto was there to get hit yesterday. Like, he was getting hit, and Victor Ortiz just wasn't turning over. He just wasn't committing to just being offensive when it was time. He would throw the punches, but he wasn't throwing them, like, trying to, like, hurt him like he was the first fight. And had he done that, I think the fight would have been a little different. It wouldn't have been just him winning on his boxing and then, you know, getting caught in the fourth round with a punch he couldn't see. Do I think Broner would knock Berto out? Probably not, but I know he would beat him. And, you know, that's why Danny Garcia never accepted anyone's challenge. That's why he's so eager to lick his chops with Berto, because, you know, the stiffness of Berto make him just a target, and Danny Garcia going to just be clipping him all day. Berto going to come forward like he was doing, and he looked so uncomfortable coming forward, too. It just didn't look right for him. Maybe he had an idea that Ortiz was going to come forward and be the Matador-type person, but he just looked so uncomfortable and stiff coming forward. And if this Ortiz just turned that into a lot more aggression, I think the fight would have been different. But, yeah, the point I was making, though, is we can't judge him because we know he doesn't have a lot of mental fortitude when he's behind the eight ball. So outside of that, I don't think we can, like, just knock him for who he is, because that is who he is. So, yeah, that's just what I think.
Gotcha. Just a real quick, what you got to say on that?
So I agree with a lot of what he's saying, but what I will say is I don't think it's mental fortitude. I think Ortiz is who he is, And for me, I love Ortiz. His fights are entertaining all the time. I just think when he get, I don't think whatever fight he had fought yesterday, he would have got caught. Because his natural instinct is once he gets hit, he just gets short-circuited. For whatever reason, when he gets hit in the Madonna fight, Josecito Lopez, or you can go on and on and on. Every time he gets hit in a fight, it's just like his mind just goes, it's like he's not there anymore. This isn't the same Ortiz that came in the ring. And I think if he'd have fought the fight he fought in the first fight, it would have been the same outcome. I just think Ortiz, once he gets short-circuited, it just happens. There's no coming back from it, and no matter what fight he's in. In saying that, I mean, Berto, I think he knew. I picked Berto, so I think Berto knew that at some point Ortiz is going to make a mistake. That's just who Ortiz is. He's not a very defensive fighter, and both of them, to me, are mirror images of each other. Both are very offensive style fighters, and they're very lack of defense. So once they get hit, it's going to be a problem. It's just that Berto's more capable, I guess, mentally of handling it, I guess, just a little bit better at it. Both of their chins are bad. Their defense aren't good. Both of them are good offensive fighters. I would want Ortiz to retire only because not because of the punishment he's taking. It's just what it does to him mentally in every one of these fights. It's like he just brings you so high, and then he just disappoints you. And I think he feels like that to himself. Like, he can be so good, but he can be, you know, so bad and so awful. And then it's just like, you know, people love him because of his style, but people, once he get knocked out or, you know, he's short-circuited, it's just like people shit on him. And it's like, it's sad to see because, you know, because he brings so much. And something he said yesterday when he got interviewed, he was like, you know, you're never anybody, you know, every time you see me fight, you're always entertained. And that's one thing about him. But at the same time, you can't keep having, I don't know what it does to his mental when he goes through these things. I can only imagine, you know, and there was videos of, you know, people trying to throw stuff at him after the fight and all that crazy stuff. It's just like, I don't know how mentally capable he can handle it, you know, with this keep coming up. And I think, you know, people, you know, we get all up for him once he gets the knockdown, and when he loses or gets knocked out, you know, it's just crazy, you know, the relationship, you know, people have with Ortiz. But with Berto, you know, I don't think this speaks much more to Berto than it does to Ortiz. I just think Ortiz is just not, you know, I don't think it's just fit for him to be a boxer, just in what it does to him mentally and physically. I just think he should give it up, man. But it was a good fight. You know, I don't think Ortiz could afford a boxing style, and he just doesn't have the mental capability to keep that up for 12 rounds. So at some point, he was going to get caught. So it was just a matter of time.
Yeah. It looks like, with Victor Ortiz, he was just he just left himself open. And while it seemed like he may have, you know, had a thing where he was having a little bit of an advantage, you know, boxing Berto, it just seemed like he just left himself open to the offense that Andre Berto had, and ended up getting knocked down there in the fourth round, and then having that second knockdown be the fight ender. So, Terrell, if you have any thoughts on this fight?
Yeah, actually, Morrick made a great point, and also Mike did too, about identifying that trait that Ortiz has shown time and time again when he faces adversity. He just doesn't have that willpower to fight back, to dig deep, all that stuff, all those words that we know. Actually, I had Ortiz in this fight. No real particular reason. I really thought that Ortiz had a lot more to prove in trying to get back into the spotlight, more so than Berto. I mean, Berto was coming off the Mayweather loss. I mean, that's the pinnacle fight of his career, pinnacle payday and things like that. So I didn't know if Berto was still coming as hungry. That's why I gave that slight edge to Ortiz. But like, so you guys made a great point in, like I said, identifying that trait that Ortiz shows. and particularly Wolverine. You guys recall that when Ortiz fought Maidana way back when, you guys remember in the post-fight interview, Verdo was on the verge of quitting, and you guys recall when he spoke about the fact that he said no one deserves to take punishment like that. And he took a lot of heat from that interview at that point, because no fighter has ever said something like that. Most people, they get a knockout loss, they said the better man won, whatever, whatever. But he basically, like you said, from that point on, way back when Maidana fight, he basically almost quit boxing. And everybody was like, what? How are you going to quit boxing after that? You know? So, but from one, as far as the Berto Ortiz fight, that's a beautiful uppercut. Beautiful. See, he timed that perfectly. It was just beautiful. That's all I can say about that. Another thing with Mike, I do not agree that Ronda would beat Berto. I don't agree with that at all. I think there will be a lot of head games from Bona's part to try to compensate for the fear or whatever else that of facing a Berto opponent. That would be a good fight. I think that fight will get dirty on top of that. But I think Ronda will not be Berto. I'm sorry, I don't think that. And that's largely because of the lack of mental toughness that Ronda was experiencing in that fight. Probably disqualify something like that, but going forward from this fight, like we talked about before, Ortiz, back to the drawing board. Berto, he's, like I said, might be in line for a number one shot with Danny Garcia. And also, like I said last week, from this fight, we're going to know going forward as just figure out another piece of puzzle for the welterweight division. Now, with Berto getting knocked down, Garcia sees that. He should be like himself. Man, I got this dude. I got this dude all day. So with this said, we should make this fight. Let's make the Berto Danny Garcia fight. Because when I said seeing that up close, he's probably saying, yeah, I definitely got this. No problem. Let's make the fight. So I hope that's a fight that we see in the very near future. I really do.
So the reason why Berto would do well against Berto is because the two punches that Broner loves throwing from his flat-footedness are the left hook and right uppercut. And I don't see Berto moving his head away from either of those punches. And Broner, you know, when you let him and you let him get confident and feel like he can throw those punches and not be, you know, be persecuted from after throwing those punches, like you don't throw them back at him, Broner get his rocks off. And I think Broner just going to tag him all day with that left hand and that right uppercut. And them punches, he going to start throwing them with just the same ferocity that he used to throw them when he fought, like, little guys and stuff. And I just don't see Berto getting his head out of the way of those punches. And it's going to be just him getting clocked all day. That's what I think. What do everybody else think?
Hey, Mike, have you ever seen Broner dominate a good-level fighter at – past 135?
At 135.
No, I'm saying anybody higher than 135. Have you ever seen Broner dominate anyone higher than lightweight?
No, but at the same time, Broner has not fought anyone that just stands there and lets them hit him like the lightweight guys do. And I think Berto will just stand there and let him hit him. And that's when Broner get his rocks off, when he was fighting guys. Yeah, he wasn't afraid of their power, but they stood there and let him hit him. Like, the guys who do that, even with the dude who he knocked out with the last round, and it was that uppercut, the dude was standing there to get hit. Like, with guys who don't stand there, like some porters who move, step to the side, hit you, step to the side, you know, guys like that, yeah, he hadn't done well. Probably Malignaggi, you know, fast on his feet. He hadn't done well, but Berto ain't finna move and get out of the way of punches. So, but I'll hear your point. I'm sorry.
Now, so Taylor sat right in front of Broner, and Theo Payne moved, and Theo Payne is no level near Berto, and he lasted 9 rounds with him and did nothing. He did nothing through the whole fight and lasted 9 rounds with Broner. And Taylor basically fought on even terms with him. You know, and Taylor, he stood there, even though he got knocked down, he stood there 12 rounds and was basically on even terms with Broner. I just don't see how – I get what you're saying in terms of the styles, but I just don't think
Broner's that good to implement that for 12 rounds.
If Berto doesn't give him anything to think about, then that's the wild card. If Berto does not give him anything to think about, then Broner going to start feeling himself and feel like he's fighting a hurt duck or something, you know. But you're right. Does he have the ability to implement that? That's the question.
Yeah. Here's what I got on that. In reference to, I would say, Broner. He doesn't have like a set offense where he works. I mean, he works off of a strong jab. Now, he throws a jab a little bit, but it's not like, you know, he does it as an absolute weapon. Like, he'll throw about one or two punches at a time. So it's not like he'll have some type of offense that will keep a guy like Andre Berto at bay, especially at 147 pounds. Now, I mean, Broner says he's going to move back up to 147, but when you have guys like Andre Berto or a Denny Garcia or anybody like that that could take his punches, then what's he going to do when, you know, people start throwing those punches back? You know,
and the thing, I don't think Berto throws punches like straight enough. Like, he's so big and like, you know, bulky that, and he's just so stiff, and his punches, both of his punches, like, they'll, some of them are land, but I think Berto got, he's too stiff. His deficiency and his stiffness is going to be against good fighters is his downfall, because if he would have been in with any elite level fighter who wanted to throw punches like yesterday, when Ortiz had opportunity to, he would have got touched a lot more, like a lot more. Ortiz just wasn't trying to go out there and knock him out. He was too cautious. He was like, he put the thing in his mind, like, I am not about to get caught. I am about to be safe. And that whole thought process just made him just be stiff. I don't know. Like, if Broner come in there and realize that this guy is stiff and he's able to be hit, Broner going to throw them punches. And, you know, I have faith in Broner if he believes that, you know, Berto won't hurt him and throw punches back or is too stiff to throw punches.
Well, I certainly beg to differ. And once again, Warren made a great point. Who have we seen Broner against it? Above 135, that's a class. Other aside, we already know against Madonna how he did against that. But bottom line, the main thing, Broner does not belong at 147. And for some people, that weight, the little 7 pounds, that does matter. It does matter. And like I said, that would be a good rough and tough fight between Berto and Broner. But we already know he does not carry that power going forward at 147. And that little difference right there does matter. And like I said, there will be a great 4 or 5 rounds after that when Berto settles down. And that little difference, that little 7 pound difference is going to start to kick in. When Broner sees that he can't bully him around, he can't push him around because he's going to be the smaller guy. You know, so.
And the one thing we always say. And the one thing we always say about Broner is though every fight he's at, we always say that he doesn't do enough. His output is always low every time he fights.
Yep.
And all those
takeaways.
I just think that if he gets in his mind that he can hit Berto, and like in the fights where he do throw punches, it's against guys where he feel like he can throw the punches against. Yeah, okay, you made a good point. Y'all made a good point that he might be afraid of Berto's power and size. That could be a legitimate threat to him, which will make him slow his output and not throw many punches. But if he get over that mental block and be like, this guy too stiff to hit me, he going to throw punches like he's fighting against the little guy. And it's not going to be a good day for Berto. But that's a big if. That's a big if.
Right. All right. So, yeah, we'll pretty much be able to see if that is going to be a possibility in the future between Adrian Broner and Andre Berto, or if Berto is able to get that particular matchup between him and Danny Garcia for the WBC Welterweight Championship. But in the meantime, as we step into the overtime portion of the show, we, you know, have the news coming in of, you know, potentially having Floyd Mayweather return for his 50th fight. And we just got, like, news coming in that him and his team have basically put in the trademarks to having the number 50 tied to a, you know, pretty much a marketing move there. So he may be coming out of retirement. He's been talking with probably, you know, Les Moonves of CBS and the guy Steven Espinosa of Showtime about potentially returning there. That he will probably get, you know, up to, you know, eight to nine figures if he was returning. So he's trying to, he's basically filed for trademarks to the term TMT50 and TDE50 there. So looks like he may be coming back for number 50. And of course, there's like a few guys that they're potentially throwing out there for him to return. You know, one of those guys is Danny Garcia there. And of course, people are trying to see if he could potentially fight a Gennady Golovkin, but I still don't think that is possible. I already know what Royal Ranks thoughts are on this. So I'm going to start with Terrell on it.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this before. I mean, it's going to be a real short list on who the possible opponent might be. Danny Garcia. I mean, I still see that as a Mayweather win. But back to the business side of it, like I said, as far as the marketing and the careful selection of the opponent, because that's what's going to help generate that revenue, the quality of that opponent. Is it Danny Garcia? Can he do that? I mean, I like Garcia. He's has a great body of work at this point. But do I see him as a great marketing adversary for a Mayweather Garcia fight? I don't see that. Not for a grand old big number 50. I don't see it. I mean, nothing against Garcia. He's just not that big yet. Matter of fact, I don't even think Garcia has been on any pay per views at all. So once again, you need a good pay per view dance partner in order to generate that revenue that they're hoping to look for. And like I said, if Mayweather does come back, is it just for this one fight? And once again, if it's just for one fight, you need a great partner to put on that card to generate the revenue that they're hoping to build for number 50 to just come back. Because we all know a lot of people were very disgusted with the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, not only from Pacquiao's performance, but some also from Mayweather. More people expected more from him. And at this point, everyone knows what Mayweather's formula is, pure boxing. There's nothing wrong with that. But everybody did expect more from the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight, more for him to mix it up and things like that, and we didn't get that. And a lot of people have clamored for him just to go ahead and move on. You're good. We don't want to see you anymore. And I mean, I've heard people say that on this show. You know, so once again, it's all about the dance partner.
Yeah, definitely would be, I'm seeing, you know, one possibility for number 50 that's being thrown out there that we pretty much talked about, fairly recently. So I'm seeing that it's probably good enough to warrant a big pay-per-view, you know, warrant pay-per-view interest from CBS and Showtime. But I'll get into that in a little bit. Go to Mike Brady on this one.
So I'm going to speak a little bit on what Terrell said and I'll get into him returning and against who. Like, okay, so I understand people aren't going to think like this, but it ain't Floyd's fault that Pacquiao was afraid that he was about to get knocked out. Floyd been fighting the way he's been fighting for the last, 10 years. You know, he's been fighting the same way. Well, okay, not 10 years, but you get what I'm saying. For the last so many fights and stuff, it was Pacquiao's job to bring the action. It was Pacquiao's job to, you know, to win the belt. And, you know, well, I don't know if the belt was up, but whatever. It was Pacquiao's job to win the fight. Floyd did what he was supposed to do. He did what he'd do against everybody else, and the formula worked. I don't see how people expected something differently from Mayweather, something that he always does. I paid $35 for the fight, and, you know, I was a little light, like, damn, Pacquiao could have tried a little bit harder. And then when he made the excuse at the end, I was just pissed off, like, are you serious, motherfucker? Like, really? You going to lose it and not even say you were better than me this night? You know, like, really? So I lost respect for Pacquiao after that. But as far as him coming back for number 50, I tell you what, if Khan wins this fight by some fluke or whatever, it'll be Khan that he fights for number 50. Outside of that, Danny Garcia probably is the safest bet. Who would probably be there to offer, like, you know, the safest, better numbers? I don't know. I have to think about it a little bit more. But, yeah, of course he's coming back for 50. And I forgot what other points other people that Terrell made. But, yeah, that's what I think right now until I can think of something else.
I mean, but that's a good point. If Khan was to beat Canelo and Mayweather's already beat Canelo, and keep in mind that Khan could bring in that UK money for a pay-per-view. So that could be a great fight. It could be. And we already know that Khan has wanted to fight Mayweather for some time. So he's definitely out. To me, it's either Khan with a win over Canelo or Triple G. That's it to me. I would pay money for either.
And also, you know, we got Adrian Broner, who's like, come see me. I think that people are about to fight. They will sell the fight. They'll sell the fight such that they are, you know, like talking to each other and, you know, disrespecting each other and blah, blah, blah. And it's going to be all this hoofla and this and that. And, you know, people want to see that off of just the controversy that they could bring behind it. But I do think that for Floyd's next pay-per-view, what they are going to do is put a lot of good cards on the fight. Like, I'm pretty sure that they're going to feel this fight with, like, you know, Errol Spence going to fight on there. He's going to fight somebody on there. You know, it's going to be a bunch of good fights. Probably even the fight that they're mentioning, that they were mentioning yesterday with DeGale and Badu Jack. You know, the fight going to be filled with some good fights. That's all I do know to make up for the lack of, you know, explosions in the fight of the century. But it possibly could be Broner. You know, he'll beat the crap out of Broner, yeah. But at least they know that fight would sell, you know. I think that fight would sell because they would, you know, bring all the theatrical stuff behind it, and then Broner going to do all these crazy interviews, and, you know, Floyd going to be talking about Miyagi-san, and, you know, what's the name, never tried to try Miyagi-san, and, you know, they're going to be talking all this stuff, and, yeah. So that's what I think.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, I feel that the one that will probably get the most pay-per-view interest is if Mayweather came back to fight Adrian Broner. And the reason why is because from a marketing standpoint, you got a lot of guys that hate Floyd Mayweather, and you got a lot of guys that hate Adrian Broner. So you're going to at least see one of those two guys lose the fight. And if Mayweather pretty much gives Broner a boxing lesson, then You'll have a few people be, you know, satisfied with all that to see if Mayweather would, you know, basically shut him up to a certain extent. And it wouldn't necessarily, you know, have anything tied to it. And that's why, like, the other thing with him against Garcia, while, you know, Garcia does currently have a WBC belt, I mean, that's the only reason why, you know, Mayweather will come back, because he was the champion emeritus for, you know, the WBC and also the WBA. But that one, it just doesn't seem like Garcia looks like the type of guy that would potentially give Floyd Mayweather a loss. The thing with Gennady Golovkin, now, during that Showtime telecast, I think they were saying that Floyd Mayweather said he was walking at around, you know, around 159 or 160 or something like that, which I kind of, you know, don't see. I mean, he's been retired since about September, and he was walking around at, like, you know, he walks around at near 147 pretty much all day, every day. The highest that he's ever been in a fight is, what, 152 pounds. So I don't see how he could just all of a sudden, you know, bulk up to 158 or, you know, 160 pounds, even at his age and the amount of training that he does. So I don't see that potential fight with Gennady Golovkin actually happening because of his walk-around weight. So world ranks, I think you got like a couple of things to say on it, as, you know, you really haven't had much interest in seeing if Floyd Mayweather's coming back, but we'll get your thoughts on it, real.
So, James, you say you can or cannot see the thing happening with Golovkin.
I can't see it happening with Golovkin. I can't. Even from Floyd's end, I can't see it, and from Golovkin's end, I can't see it, because Golovkin himself, he doesn't really challenge himself. I mean, they're talking about him trying to get a fight with Floyd and saying that he would come down to 154 to fight Floyd, but he won't do 155 to fight Canelo. Whether the WBC says that Canelo can't do it or not. I mean, Golovkin and his team said that he had no problems doing that. So, I mean, he hasn't up to this point had a big fight yet with a well-known fighter that could potentially have the skills to beat Gennady, you know, to beat Gennady Golovkin. I haven't seen him try to go after, you know, anybody in super middleweight. I haven't seen him try to go after the guys at middleweight with Billy Joe Saunders and, you know, this potential thing here with him and Daniel Jacobs. I haven't seen anything with that. And, you know, they talk about, you know, him and Canelo, you know, not fighting because he don't want to fight at 155 pounds. I mean, he's not really challenging himself. So I'm, like, kind of, you know, moving away from all that with Gennady Golovkin.
I got you.
All right, there, World Rank, what you have to say on it?
So you know my take on Mayweather, so I'm not going to get into that per se. But what I will say is something that that someone said regarding the undercard. And what Mayweather said yesterday is that he's asking for eight figures. I don't know who he could make that with. Maybe Khan, maybe Triple G. Definitely not Garcia. If he's looking for those type of numbers, Mayweather is in terms of value, he's at his worst right now. He's at his worst since he was before Oscars. So, you know, nobody really wants to, you know, shell out $50 to see him fight. So I'm figuring you got to give him an opponent that people legitimately would think that he could bring money from a different bowl, or someone that could really beat him. Garcia brings neither one of those things to the table. In terms of the undercard, if he wants to get paid eight figures, that leaves no money for the undercard, because whoever's putting that pay-per-view on, either it be Showtime or whoever, they want to get some money out of this. They don't just want to, you know, have Floyd and show him, but not and taking losses, keep taking losses. So in order for them to cut their costs, the same thing what they did with the Pacquiao fight, they have to go tight or go low on the undercard. They can't make that type of payments to, you know, Earl Spence or someone by that nature, because they got to make sure Mayweather get his eight figures, which he's claiming he needs to fight someone. And then you got to pay the opponent. I don't know if it's much left, you know, with the pay-per-view buys, whoever he brings in is going to be enough. And the point about fighting Broner is, yes, it will be good for a certain demographic, but the main demographic for boxing is not interested in that fight, because you got two hated fighters from that demographic, that other demographic that brings in a lot of money. They're not going to – who they're going to cheer for. They're not interested in cheering for Mayweather. They're not interested in cheering for Broner. So, you know, you lose, you know, the biggest part of, you know, the boxing money right now, because they're not going to be interested – and two fighters that they don't like. You know, they don't have a say. They don't have a say in that type of fight. Well, if you bring Khan or if you bring Triple G, there's a certain aspect where those people, you know, they can get behind those fighters, you know, and you actually sell pay per views. But if you bring Broner, that's not going to sell to the masses like Garcia.
Well, I got another question on it. What if Canelo, as we're gonna, you know, go into this fight here that's happening on Saturday with Canelo Alvarez and Amir Khan, what if Canelo gets this win and retains the WBC middleweight championship, and we say that, you know, Mayweather is up there to where he could be around 155 pounds or whatever it is, even though he doesn't have to be 155 pounds, that he can basically make 155 pounds. Let's say if he is able to do that and, you know, Canelo Alvarez gets this win against Amir Khan, and that Floyd Mayweather says he's coming back to fight Canelo Alvarez for that middleweight championship, and to say that he could get, you know, another title in another division. What y'all think about the potential of that rematch?
I mean, honestly, out of all the possibilities that everybody named, that seems the most, like, financially and the most financially sensible. And as far as legacy, you know, he gets a middleweight added to his legacy, and then he'll be able to make all that money with Canelo, because, you know, people will support Canelo, and he gonna have another belt to his name. So I think actually Canelo is probably the best fighter to have a fight with.
Yeah, from a financial standpoint, I see it, because, I mean, he's, you know, he's still the right now he's the biggest draw in the sport of boxing, you know, by far, I would say. With the comparison of these other fighters, whether it's Golovkin or any heavyweight or, you know, anybody that's below middleweight. So with him being the number one guy right now, if he's still able to get this win over Amir Khan, which I feel that he's actually going to get, it's not going to be a question, that he is, that may be a potential fight that's going to happen. I don't know what the asking price is going to be for Mayweather, if that's going to be the case, but if he wants to go after the middleweight championship, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes after Canelo Alvarez or Amir Khan, as y'all were saying. Let's see. Anyone else have any thoughts on that potential fight happening?
Hey, what fight was that again? Sorry, James. What fight was that again?
A potential rematch between Mayweather and Canelo Alvarez, this time for the middleweight championship.
I think that would be largely based upon, of course, the fact that Canelo would have to win, and also mainly because of the how many numbers him and Khan would do. I mean, if he can manage the – I mean, once again, if Canelo Khan can pull numbers from U.K., and make that viable and very attractive, yeah, I could see that. And I wouldn't mind seeing that, because I would like to say that Canelo's a better fighter at this point and will be even better fighter after the Khan fight. So I could see that. I mean, no big clamoring for it, but I could see that. But like I said, it would be a very short list as far as who Mayweather fights for a number 50, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see how that could potentially happen. Just getting into that card that's going to happen on May 7th, we have like a couple of undercard fights there. One, actually, they're trying to get one of the boxers that I interviewed after the fight card that happened back on March 5th, and that's Lamont Roach Jr., who went 10-0 in his previous fight. In the DC Army. So they're trying to get him in for a lightweight fight.
Golden Boy Promotions trying to fit him in there for a lightweight fight. So we might see Lamont Rhodes Jr. in action there. And another one, that's another fight that's happening is they're going to have Diego De La Hoya going up in his 15th fight against Russell Santamaro. And it's going to be for one of those youth bantamweight championships there that they have on this particular card. And the two other middleweight fights that are happening there is Patrick Teixeira, who's undefeated, going up against Curtis Stevens, who, you know, previously lost to Triple G and actually lost his previous fight to former belt holder Hassan Ndam in GCOM back in 2014. So it's actually going to be Curtis Stevens' first fight in over a year going up against the undefeated Patrick Teixeira. And the other middleweight fight, former title holder David Lemieux going up against Glenn Tapia there. And that's going to be a pretty interesting fight for both fighters, particularly with David Lemieux, who formerly held that IBF middleweight championship, to see if he can get back into the middleweight, you know, the middleweight rankings there with that fight. So, and the co-feature, they had Mauricio Pereira going up against undefeated Frankie Gomez there at welterweight. So, it looks like some pretty, I wouldn't say they were like great, great fights, but it seems like I would say a couple of crossroads fights out there in the middleweight division, and you have Mauricio Pereira there as a co-feature. So I'm not necessarily sure what the overall buys are going to be for this particular fight card, because, I mean, with it being Canelo, I would say I would say about 300,000 to 400,000 pay-per-view buys for this particular fight card. I would say, what do y'all think about reach, like, what was it, like Canelo and Lara numbers, or will it even be less than that?
What did Canelo and Lara do?
I think Canelo and Lara did about 350,000. Let me check here. I think it was, yeah, Canelo Lara was 300,000.
Yeah, I think it'll do that or more. It'll definitely do 300,000, I believe. Yeah,
I agree.
I say do a half a million. Canelo, he's the number one draw in the sport. You know, he has the backing of everyone. You know, Khan can bring the UK sales. So yeah, I think he's gonna do like a half a million.
Yeah, with Khan being that additional guy coming in there with the British backing there, so I think a good number of the British fans over there with Sky Sports will be able to get more buys out of that. So I think that's going to, you know, get something there so that it could reach about half a million to, you know, probably about maximum about 600,000, I would say. What about you, Terrell?
Yeah, I mean, we know with some recent history that the UK is going to travel to this fight, not only travel to the fight, but buy the pay-per-views as well, dating back to Khan, dating back to Calzaghe. They do support their fans. They're very avid fans, as we are as well. So, number-wise, I'm in agreement with all you guys. Like I said, half a million buys, 500,000 buys, that is, stuff like that. So, right along there with you guys.
All right.
Like you mentioned earlier, Herrera's going to get cheated. That's what I do know, unfortunately. Herrera will get cheated unless he knocks someone out.
True.
I don't think he gets cheated.
I think this Frankie Gomez coming out party, I think he clearly beats Herrera. I don't think it's going to be a robbery. I said Andre Berto was on the comeback trail. I said Spence was that was his breakout fight. It's going to be Frankie Gomez's breakout fight.
Yeah, I got to watch Frankie Gomez a little bit more. I saw a couple of his fights, but I don't remember what he did.
Yeah, just getting into a little bit more news here in the overtime section. I'm seeing that through ESPN.com's Dan Ratio that there may be a potential fight in the summer. That will be a unification fight between Kell Brook and Jesse Vargas. They have been, you know, Metro Boxing's Eddie Hearn was seeing if he could, you know, talk with Carl Moretti, who's the vice president of Top Rank Promotions, in that, you know, those that they could be a potential fight between Kell Brook and Jesse Vargas to unify the IBF and WBO welterweight championships. I'm thinking that that potentially may happen, you know, near the end of July, maybe, between those two, as you have the undefeated Kell Brook, you know, who one day IBF versus the title over Sean Porter, and then you have Jesse Vargas, who won the vacant WBO welterweight championship on March 5th against Saddam Ali. With Vargas only lost to Timothy Bradley. So if it potentially happens, who would you think would have the upper hand in that potential fight? I'm going to start with 12.
Between Kell Brook and Vargas?
Yeah.
You know, honestly, right now I have that as dead even. The reason why, Vargas just got his belt, so there's going to be some additional pressure on him to keep that belt. But at the same time, he gains experience at the same time from being a champion, a world champion. With Kell Brook is multi-talented, has a lot of skills that he brings to the table. He's been a belt holder for a couple years now, ever since he took it from Devin Alexander, I believe it was.
Sure.
But at the same time, we haven't seen Kell Brook in with another elite fighter. And that's not necessarily his fault, because contrary to him already, that would have been a great fight. Not domestic fight, but that would have been a great world championship fight between him and Khan. That fight didn't happen. Because as we already know, Khan said he doesn't need Kell Brook to define his career. And in a sense, he's right, but he's still, I rarely use these words, but he's a bitch for not taking that fight. That's not just how I feel about it. But as far as Vargas, Brook, right now that's dead even. That's dead even for different reasons. So,
all right. Who do you favor in this potential fight?
I favor Kell Brook. He's only been in with one world class guy, and he's clearly on that level. Vargas, to me, I mean, he did nothing in the Bradley fight until the 12th round. Saddam Ali fight, what level is Saddam Ali? I'm not saying Saddam Ali is a bum. I'm not saying that, but I don't think Saddam Ali, that was his proven fight, you know, and he failed the test. So I don't really know if Vargas is at that elite level. So I'm taking Kell Brook.
Okay. All right, Mike, who you got?
I'm going to say exactly the same thing that World Rank said, but I'm just going to make it a lot more shorter. I don't see what Vargas could do that offset what Kell Brook, what I think Kell Brook could do. So, but regurgitate everything World Rank said, and that's how I feel too.
Well, I mean, I feel that Vargas gained a good amount of confidence there with you know, that fight against Saddam Ali there in the welterweight division, but it's like the question was raised before. How good is Saddam Ali, especially within the welterweight division? I mean, if he wasn't able to, you know, face somebody like a Jesse Vargas, who also came from you know, light welterweight, 440 pounds, then what can Saddam Ali do against, you know, the ranks of other guys that are, you know, actual true welterweight? So, I mean, that could have potentially been the ceiling there for Saddam Ali there at the welterweight ranks. And so, with that being known, if Jesse Vargas couldn't, you know, necessarily do well against a, you know, a true viable welterweight in Timothy Bradley in the until like the 12th round, and then what can he do against a guy like Kell Brook, who has been at welterweight for, you know, a good amount of time there at the welterweight division? And so with that being known, I would favor Kell Brook in that potential matchup. All right, with that being said there, I'm pretty much going to, you know, end this overtime portion of the show and look forward to next week's version where we will get into the fight card between Canelo Alvarez and Amir Khan and see what other news and notes will come over the next week within the sport of boxing. So we will look forward to that particular show, and make sure that you catch our sister shows that are here on the Emerald Broadcasting Channel with Nicole Hart, Truth on Sports, hosted by the Executioner Matthew Long, Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. and on Wednesday nights at 8:30 we have the CNT Firestone Football Talk Show with host Kelly Mike with Chi-Town Crossell Mathis and other callers calling in for that football show. So be sure to catch those each week here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. So with that being said, like I close out every show, the Port of Boxing is a hit and not get hit. Not to say the trade. On that note, folks, I'm out. Y'all have a good evening.